You're listening to History for Christian Teens, the podcast where we examine historical people, places, and events through the lens of the Bible, drawing meaningful lessons that we can apply to our own lives as believers. This podcast is designed for middle and high school age students, but mom and dad and everyone else, you're invited to listen in too. This broadcast is brought to you by the Ultimate Homeschool Podcast Network. Welcome to the History for Christian Teens podcast. I'm your host, Crystal Niehoff.
And I'm your co-host, Kevin Niehoff. Thank you for listening in today. We've got a lot to cover, so let's dive in. This week, we explore the harrowing account of a man named Joseph who was sold into slavery by his own brothers, but was able to rise above his circumstances and even eventually forgive them for what they did.
Joseph lived between 1914 and 1804 BC, and we find his story in Genesis chapters 37 through 50. He's the 11th of 12 sons of Jacob and the firstborn son of Rachel, the wife whom Jacob loved the most. So not surprisingly, Joseph was Jacob's favorite son, which caused the older brothers to be jealous and hate their younger brother. To further add to the strife between the brothers, Joseph would tell them about dreams that he had in which he ruled over them, and even the sun, moon, and stars would bow down to him. When Joseph told his father the dreams, Jacob rebuked him, as we read in Genesis 37:10, exclaiming, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" One day, Joseph's brothers had taken their father's sheep out into the fields to graze. Later on, Jacob told Joseph to go out into the field and check on his brothers, then come back and let him know how they're doing. As Joseph was searching for his brothers, they saw him coming in the distance.
We read in Genesis 37, 19 through 28. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of those cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. "Let's not take his life," he said. "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into this cistern here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornate robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. The cistern was empty. There was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt.
At least they spared his life, but sadly used that as a justification for selling their little brother into slavery and profiting from it. After Reuben returned to find Joseph was gone, the brothers slaughtered a goat, spreading its blood onto Joseph's robe, and took it to their father. When Jacob saw his beloved son's blood-covered robe, the brothers let their father believe that a ferocious wild animal had killed and devoured Joseph. Jacob went into deep mourning for his son. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. Despite the ordeal that Joseph had just been through, the Lord was with Joseph, and he grew in favor with Potiphar because everything Joseph did was successful. Potiphar eventually appointed Joseph as head of his household and put him in charge of everything he owned.
However, another issue was brewing for Joseph. Genesis 39:6 tells us that Joseph was a handsome and well-built, which caused Potiphar's wife to be attracted to him. Day after day, she made advances toward Joseph. But Joseph was a godly man, and as we read in Genesis 39:8-9, Joseph refused her, explaining perhaps even imploring, "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" Unfortunately, Potiphar's wife would not take no for an answer. One day, when no one else was around, she grabbed Joseph and desperately tried to entice him to be intimate with her. But he ran out of the house, leaving his cloak in her hands. Angry at the rejection, Potiphar's wife called out to her servants, falsely claiming that Joseph tried to force himself on her. Later, she told her husband the same made-up story, and he was furious. Potiphar immediately had Joseph thrown into prison without so much as a trial. Reading in verses 20 through 23, we learn, "But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness, granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did."
Turning to Genesis chapter 40, we find Joseph still imprisoned. There with him now were the chief cupbearer and the chief baker because they had angered Pharaoh. Sometime later, the cupbearer and the baker both had strange dreams that they could not make sense of. Joseph asked them to share with him their dreams. Then he interpreted them. The dream of the chief cupbearer was interpreted by Joseph to mean that he would be released from prison and restored to his position. Joseph asked the chief cupbearer to remember him when that happens and show him kindness. He asked that he would mention him to Pharaoh, explaining that he was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews and even in prison did nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon. The chief baker's dream sadly had a gruesome end for him. Soon the circumstances revealed that Joseph had indeed interpreted the dreams correctly. However, when the chief cupbearer was restored to his position, he forgot all about Joseph. So Joseph remained in prison, though he had done nothing wrong.
2 full years later, we learn in Genesis 41 that Pharaoh himself had a dream. Reading verses 1 through 16, that in his dream, he was standing by the Nile. "When out of the river came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, 7 other cows, ugly and gaunt, came up out of the Nile and stood beside those on the riverbank. And the cows that were ugly and gaunt ate up the 7 sleek and fat cows. Then Pharaoh woke up. He fell asleep again in a second dream. 7 heads of grain, healthy and good, were growing in a single stalk. After them, 7 other heads of grain sprouted, thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the 7 healthy full heads. Then Pharaoh woke up. It had been a dream. In the morning, his mind was troubled, so he sent for all the magicians and wise men of Egypt. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but no one could interpret them for him.
Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "Today I am reminded of my shortcomings. Pharaoh was once angry with his servants, and he imprisoned me and the chief baker in the house of the captain of the guard. Each of us had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. Now a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams, and he interpreted them for us, giving each man the interpretation of his dream. And things turned out exactly as he interpreted them to us. I was restored to my position, and the other man was impaled. So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'I had a dream, and no one can interpret it. But I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it.' 'I cannot do it,' Joseph replied to Pharaoh, 'but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires.'"
Pharaoh then told Joseph his dreams in detail, picking up with verses 25 through 40. "Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, 'The dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years. The seven good heads of grain are 7 years. It is one and the same dream. The seven lean, ugly cows that came up afterwards are 7 years, and so are the seven worthless heads of grain scorched by the east wind. They are 7 years of famine. It is just as I said to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. 7 years of great abundance are coming throughout the land of Egypt, but 7 years of famine will follow them. Then all the abundance in Egypt will be forgotten, and the famine will ravage the land. The abundance in the land will not be remembered because the famine that follows will be so severe. The reason the dream was given to Pharaoh in two forms is that the matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it soon. And now let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. They should collect all the food of these good years that are coming and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh to be kept in the cities for food. This food should be held in reserve for the country to be used during the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt, so that the country may not be ruined by the famine. The plan seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his officials, so Pharaoh asked them, "Can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you."
Wow. From prison to palace. Verse 46 tells us that Joseph was merely 30 years old when he became second only to the king himself. If that was the end of Joseph's story, that would be pretty amazing all on its own. But there's so much more, so let's continue on. During the years of plenty that followed, Joseph coordinated the collection and storage of the abundant crops of grain in cities throughout Egypt. When the 7 years of abundance came to an end and a severe famine began to spread throughout the land, he opened all the storehouses and sold grain to the Egyptians.
The drought and famine spread into other countries, including the land of Canaan, where Joseph's father, brothers, and their families lived. When Jacob heard that there was grain in Egypt, he instructed his sons to go and purchase grain there. Otherwise, they might all starve to death. All the brothers traveled to Egypt, except for Benjamin, the youngest son of Jacob's beloved Rachel, whom he kept back with him. After a long journey, the brothers arrived to buy food from the Egyptian government. As soon as Joseph saw them, he recognized them. But they didn't recognize Joseph. How could they? After all, Joseph was just a young boy when they sold him into slavery. But now he was a grown man and in quite a powerful position, something they certainly would not have expected. Joseph decided to take advantage of this situation to determine whether his brothers had any regret for selling him into slavery. Through using a series of dramatic maneuvers, Joseph tested his brothers' determination to save their youngest brother, Benjamin, Joseph's only maternal brother, from the scenario he set up for him. Once Joseph saw his brother's devotion toward Benjamin, he finally revealed his identity to his astonished siblings. Joseph then extended forgiveness to his brothers and reconciled with them. Following this heartfelt reunion, the brothers returned to Canaan to bring their father, Jacob, and the rest of their family members back to Egypt to settle near Joseph.
Before we move on to discuss the takeaways from this account of Joseph, let's explore the evidence outside of the Bible in relation to Egypt during this time period. According to the BBC in their article simply titled, Joseph, quote, "It is often thought that the story may have some historical tradition, but with a healthy portion of dramatic license. Egyptologists, however, have uncovered some intriguing evidence," end quote. The article goes on to add that, quote, "Studies in ice cores found in Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania, the mountain which supplies the Nile with its water, have revealed that a drought did take place around 3,600 years ago, around the time the Bible sets Joseph's story," end quote.
In another article, "Does Archaeology Confirm Joseph's Time in Egypt?" published in the fall of 2021 issue of Biblical Archaeological Review, states that, quote, "Rachel Hallett looks at Joseph's story from a historical perspective. a professor of history at Purchase College of the State University of New York, Hallett examines the archaeological record from different periods of Egyptian history and tries to anchor the biblical story in reliable historical and archaeological sources. Looking for a plausible historical setting, Hallett points to the fact that from early 2nd millennium BCE, people from Canaan were infiltrating the northeastern regions of Egypt, end quote. As we read further in the article, they explain that, quote, building on archaeological evidence from the eastern Nile Delta, the biblical story does indeed align with the Egyptian sources for the Hyksos. People originating in Canaan come to Egypt, gain in prominence, and finally leave for Canaan, being pursued by the Egyptian army.
Amazing. Remember, Joseph's brothers, father, and their families all moved to Egypt from Canaan. So while they're known by many names, Israelites and Hebrews, for example, another term used for them were Canaanites. Here we discovered that, just as the Bible says, the Israelites moved to Egypt near the shores of the Nile and grew in number. Plus, the time period lines up with the time frame given in the Bible. The Bible is trustworthy and is indeed historically accurate. So, what can we learn from the story of Joseph to apply to our own lives as Christians?
Life application lesson number one. Nothing good comes from boasting. As we began our story of Joseph, we found him a young lad. Though we're not told exactly how old, I'm guessing in the age range of 10 to 13, but that's just a guess. Joseph recounts his dreams to his older brothers, of them all bowing down to him. They were already jealous of the favoritism their father showed to Joseph. Now he had the audacity to dream that they would bow down to him. How high and mighty that attitude must have seemed to the brothers. Please note that regardless of what young Joseph did or did not say, nothing could ever justify his brothers selling him into slavery and lying about his fate to their father. Perhaps all this could have been avoided had Joseph practiced a little humility, or at least kept his dreams to himself. But again, we must remember that he was just a child. Regardless, one thing is clear. Just as it says in Romans 8:28, in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. What does the Bible itself say about boasting? Jeremiah 9:23 says, this is what the Lord says, let not the wise boast of their wisdom, or the strong boast of their strength, or the rich boast of their riches. Proverbs 27:2 says, let someone else praise you, and not your own mouth, an outsider, and not your own lips.
Life application lesson number two. Forgiveness is vital, but it's okay to use caution when restoring the relationship. Can you imagine the incredible emotional and spiritual and likely physical pain inflicted upon Joseph by his older brothers, whom he trusted to protect and care for him? Can you feel the fear he had of never seeing his father and baby brother again? The dread of what will happen to him by these strangers who purchased him? How can you forgive someone who has wounded you so deeply and changed your life forever? First, note that there is a difference between forgiveness and trust. Gauging from how Joseph conducted himself in the years following being sold into slavery, there is no mention of grudges or bitterness in Joseph's heart towards his brothers. It's my personal opinion that Joseph had already come to a place where he was able to forgive his brothers and go on with his life. However, when his brothers popped back up into his life, Joseph was not so quick to reveal who he was or open himself back up to being hurt again. Rather, Joseph tested his brothers to see if they had indeed changed before trusting them to be a part of his life once more. Had they failed the test, I think Joseph might have either banished them from the land altogether or sent grain back with them for the sake of his brother Benjamin and his father, but possibly never reveal who he truly was and never attempt to restore their fractured relationship. Thankfully, though, the brothers did pass the test and the entire family was saved from starvation. Secondly, Forgiveness isn't meant to release the other person to hurt you again. It's meant to free you from the bitterness that'll set into your heart and mind, snuffing out all joy and peace if you don't forgive. Had Joseph harbored unforgiveness all those years before seeing his brothers again, he surely would have become a very bitter man, and the outcome of the story undoubtedly would have had a much different outcome. Forgiveness released Joseph to move on, to serve God, and find peace in the midst of his circumstances. Matthew 6:15 warns us that if you do not forgive others their sins, your Father will not forgive your sins. I am so grateful that the Lord doesn't harbor unforgiveness toward me, even though my sins are many. Daniel 9 verse 9 tells us, "The Lord our God is merciful and forgiving, even though we have rebelled against him." If you find yourself struggling to forgive someone, ask the Lord to help you. He understands how hard it is to forgive, but the Lord wants you to experience the peace and freedom that comes when you forgive. Also know that, just like Joseph, it's okay to be careful before allowing someone who's hurt you back into your life, even after you've forgiven them. Be sure to pray and seek the Lord's direction, and talk it through with your parents, who can give you wise and loving counsel on what to do.
And finally, life application lesson number 3. Do the right thing no matter what. Joseph clearly loved the Lord and sought to live right before God. Even after he was sold by his brothers into slavery, he worked hard and did the right thing. When his master's wife tried to entice him to sin, he respected God, his master, and himself enough to run from sin and refuse to take any part in it. And even after Joseph did the right thing, he was still thrown into prison due to being falsely accused by his master's wife. Yet Joseph still continued to serve God and do what was right. And 1 Peter 3:14 says, "But even if you should suffer for what is right, you are blessed. Do not fear their threats. Do not be frightened." Galatians 6:9 encourages us with these words, "Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up." In the end, we see that this promise is most assuredly true. Joseph was released from prison and elevated to the highest position in the land, just under Pharaoh, because Joseph could be trusted.
Such an amazing story. Joseph the dreamer went from pit to prison to palace. God had a mighty calling on Joseph's life, and the Lord has a purpose and a calling for your life too. In Jeremiah 29:11, the Lord tells us, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future."
Praying for you, you were inspired by Joseph's life today. Please join us next time when we learn about a baby who escaped death by floating down the crocodile-infested Nile River in a basket, then grew up to lead his people out of captivity.
If you have questions, comments, or are in need of prayer, you can reach us by email at historyforchristianteens@gmail.com and find us on Facebook and Instagram at History for Christian Teens. Have a blessed week. Thanks for listening in today. If you like this podcast, please be sure to subscribe and give us a star rating on your favorite podcast app. You can follow us on Facebook too. Links to this and all the other resources mentioned during the podcast today can be found in our show notes at historyforchristianteens.com. We hope you'll join us again next week for another thought-provoking and insightful lesson in History for Christian Teens.